We are now live with my main man, one of my best friends, number zero on the field, number one in your hearts, left fielder for the Cardinals, Austin Dean. Deaner, how are you, sir?
I'm great, my friend. I'm doing great. Hanging in there.
Everyone tuning in, if you don't know by now, the Cardinals have been under quarantine for, was it 5 days?
Six. Today is number six.
Today's number six. Mm-hmm. Walk us through that. You get shut down, and then boom, you're under house arrest.
Dude, so we were off day, Milwaukee, which where we're at currently right now, Milwaukee. You know, doing our normal testing. You know, we get a text from our managers. You know, a couple guys got COVID, and from there it was like, all right. Everything is now, we got to test everybody every single day. And so we did, we followed the procedures, we did everything. And then and some more guys got tested, and it was probably just being, you know, close in contact with the guys that got infected. And, you know, one thing led to another, man, and just kind of an outbreak. So fortunate enough that I wasn't around it. I can say that none of our guys broke protocol. I think it was just kind of a, somebody came in contact with somebody and then spread like wildfire.
So, yeah.
But yeah.
I guess, do you and your roommate next door have little plastic cups to talk to each other? Like
I wish the treehouse? I wish I had the phone cups to be able to talk to somebody. But and I was talking to Tyler O'Neill today, 8 a.m. Saliva test. And I see him. I was like, God, man, I really miss you guys. I fucking can't really remember what you guys look like, you know? So... I mean, it's a crazy time, but you know, I think the way we're handling it is perfect. And you know, everybody out there wants to speculate that, you know, this and this happened and whatever, but you know, it's whatever, man, it happens. You know, just right now, at least we can, you know, we got on top of it as quick as we can, and it didn't really spread as bad as we really thought it would, you know.
Yeah, we were joking about this on text, and I was like, you're going to have such an interesting story to tell your kids one day. Like, not only are you a Major League Baseball player, you know, your kids would be like, Dad, you know, what was it like playing in the major leagues? And you've grinded. We talked about it before, if you want to, you know, touch on it a bit, but you've grinded to get where you are. And then now that you're in the show over the last few years, like year two, year three, you have COVID you have to deal with. And everything and the fallout of that. So, I mean, if you want to touch on your journey of how we got to this moment, that'd be great.
Crazy stuff, man. To think back, it all happened in 2012. You know, took the opportunity to go play professional baseball over, you know, the University of Texas. So, man, I'll tell you, my time with the Marlins, who I was with, was incredible. You know, a lot of good memories, a lot of good people that I played with. I actually just texted my buddy today, Eddie Alvarez, who, fun fact, is a 2014 silver medalist speed skater who was with Apollo Ohno when all that was going on. His teammates with him. He went to the Olympics in 2014, won silver medal, and he got called up today.
That's awesome. That's freaking awesome.
You talk about the greatest human being on earth and the hardest working guy, hands down. So go guys, give him a look. So with the Marlins, Eddie Alvarez, look at his story. But anyways, yeah, man, just the whole process of just going through the minor leagues and then, you know, finally getting my shot in 2018 and getting called up to the big leagues was a dream come true. And, you know, I got traded in the offseason to the Cardinals, and, you know, probably one of the greatest organizations in baseball.
Yeah.
And I absolutely freaking love it, man. Just huge. Just everybody's just awesome. You know, just being able to be with Yachty, Wainwright, like all these guys that I grew up watching, man. It's so cool. So, yeah. But yeah, this would definitely be a story to tell the kids, man.
Yeah. I don't know this story. What was it like? Your call-up day, when you were getting that call that, hey, you're going to the show, what was that like?
So we were in Memphis, AAA for the Cardinals. We were in Memphis. Game was over. we were all going to a place called Cookie Canucks, which is like on the little strip right next to the stadium. Sitting there, we all order food, and then a manager calls me and he goes, "Hey, I need you to come back." I'm like,
yeah,
I got trouble or, you know, something, whatever. Head back, wasn't too far. I'm in the office. He's sitting there, and all the other coaches are sitting there too. I'm like, what's going on? Like, I have no clue what's going on right now. So gives me the whole spiel, like, you know, how I've been doing, some stuff I can improve on. And then he goes, "Oh yeah, you're going to the big leagues tomorrow." And then, dude, my stomach like fell out of my butt. Like, I was so happy. Like, my freaking smile was like ear to ear. And there were some of my teammates were still in there, and, you know, they were all pumped up for me, and it was awesome. So called my fiance at the time, called her up, told her I couldn't help. I cried, called my parents, agent, everybody, the whole night. And then next morning, I get up 5 o'clock, get on a plane to where we're going to Atlanta, first class seat, get to the field, and I'm like the first one there waiting. Yeah, so that was super cool. And that was the day that Urania decided to hit Acuna, and we got in a bench clearing brawl my first game in the
big league. Yeah. Which is, it's so funny because we were obviously, I was texting you and I was like, holy shit, like Dean's up. Me and my dad, all of us are so pumped. And then there's a brawl, and I was like, "This is awesome!" And we see you at the edge of the circle. You know, the camera's zoomed out. Anymore, you'd be out of it. And I'm just like, "Welcome to the show!" Like, what an incredible opportunity that is to be that year.
Oh, you talk about shitting your pants. I was definitely shitting my pants then.
No, that's great. Now with the Cardinals, obviously, you've seen the business side of baseball. You're with the Marlins. You get traded to the Cardinals. You get to stay in the same spot in spring training, which is great. You just go across at Roger Dean. But what's that like when you've been playing the sport your entire life? It's a kid's sport, they say, but people don't realize the business side of things. You've been acquired by another team, they traded for you. What does that business side of baseball look for you and for the common fan that doesn't really know?
It's hard, man. You build so many relationships in baseball. You know, imagine being with, you know, that one team for 8 years. You know, there's a lot of guys that I played with that, you know, that come and go or got traded, got released. And then there were guys that, you know, stuck with me and were in the big leagues with the Marlins. So it was just hard to, like, kind of grasp the, like, damn, man, we're not going to be teammates anymore, you know? But it's one of those things where maybe if I was a little bit younger, I'd been a little bit more upset and not really grasp the concept of, like, oh, why did I get traded, you know? So I think as I kind of saw, you know, what really goes on, like, the business side, you know, I get it and I understand, but you know, I had the conversation with our assistant GM who he was our minor league player development guy. And so he was with me from the very beginning all the way up to the big leagues. So and he's the one that called me and told me that, you know, he thinks this is going to be a good opportunity for me to come over here. And, you know, he wasn't wrong. So but since I've been over here, it's been, you know, again, like I said, it's been nothing but amazing.
Yeah, and everyone that's tuning in, Austin resides, he came up from the Woodlands area. So you're actually playing with someone that grew up in the Woodlands area as well, if you know, Mr. Paul Goldschmidt, and his family and his brothers obviously grew up playing with us coming up. So that's got to be kind of cool to know someone, you know, you got to watch growing up, you know, play high school ball, even though you went to College Park, just right across the street, you know, at Woodlands.
Yeah, so I remember talking to Paul last year in spring training and in St. Louis. It's like, hey, man, like, played baseball with your younger brother, Robbie. Like, I used to watch you growing up all the time. Like, I was sitting there, like, freaking out. It's Paul freaking Goldschmidt. So, you know, talk for a little bit. And then this year, And I see him in the clubhouse. Hey, man, how you doing? Like, good to see you. Good to have you over here. And Paul is the most down-to-earth guy in the entire world, man. So, you know, he sits there and we talk kind of every single day, ask me how I'm doing. And then when he found out that I made the team, you know, he sat there and goes, hey, man, if you need anything, just let me know. No questions asked. Boom. I was like, God, dude, just awesome guy.
That's incredible. And
Matt Carpenter. And you remember, like, we did the little thing with Carp's dad in high school.
Yeah.
It was at Lamar. That's when I hit Lamar over over the damn thing, the basketball thing.
Everyone listening and everyone that's going to watch on YouTube, when I tell you this guy has the most raw power I've ever seen from a human being in my entire life, it is the most 100% truthful thing I've ever said, because there's two instances that Austin Dean has hit a ball that I still believe if Elon Musk put a rocket into space, they wouldn't be able to find these two balls. One was at Lamar. And do you remember the other one that I'm about to say?
I don't think so, but I'm curious to know.
At Tasasita, you hit a ball. You hit a ball to the 50-yard line. So there's the football field behind the left field fence at Atascocita. And Austin Dean hits a ball into the night and proceeds to throw his hands up like he kicked a field goal. And it is the furthest, one of the furthest balls I've ever seen hit in my entire life into orbit. And then I bat at the bottom of the lineup. I'm hitting up because we're resting guys. I get drilled because Dean proceeds to do the field goal sign because he hit a ball 500 feet. But the raw power from Austin Dean is one of the most truly crazy, eye-opening things you have to see before you leave this earth, because it's incredible.
Yeah, that was cheating back then, though, with the Beezer bats.
Yeah, we had the old juice bats, which was, I'll tell you this, which is great.
Klein Collins High School, before they took the trees down, that's how we actually got to measure how far and majestic a home run was, because the trees itself were, you know, already very triumphant up top, and if you didn't go over that, you knew it was a freaking bomb. So, you know, RIP the trees. I remember that.
Yeah, missed when they those cut trees
that down, dude. That was so bad.
Everyone that's listening and tuning in, we joke about it, everyone, when we all get back together, but there could be a 30 for 30 of how much talent came out of our district in the 4 years that overlapped. It was literally every Tuesday, Friday night, you faced 94 to 95. And the arm was either going to be drafted in the first, you know, 20 rounds, or they're going somewhere big D1. It was the most ludicrous thing. And it's crazy to look back to see the talent. I mean, just in Houston in general, in that time span, you see it now. I mean, you see, you'll be facing J-Mo, and you know, J-Mo was right up the street at the Woodlands. So yeah,
I remember texting J-Mo when I was at College Park my freshman year, and you know, he was asking me about, like, say he can be on varsity this year, and in my mind, I'm like, 100%. I have no reason not to be. You know, and I've known him for a long time. So, and then I didn't even make freaking JV that year.
Yeah.
I made a sophomore team as a freshman, and it had nothing to do with my playing ability. I was plenty good enough to be on varsity. I think it was just something that was, you know, not in my control. So,
yeah, we could say that.
I think I look back at it now, like, probably the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. But I just remember every Tuesday and Friday, and I think it was my sophomore year, junior year, that every game we played, you know, it's Klein, Oak, who else do we play? Like, all those big schools in that area, there was not one single game that we played that wasn't packed.
You know? Yeah, that was a crazy thing, and it's hard to explain it to people when you're like, yeah, there's 200 people at a high school baseball game to watch, you know, where people got there during BP because they wanted to see us all hit one and two, get a good seat to watch the game. And I think the biggest, like, reality moment was we faced Georgetown at Del Diamond.
Brown Rock. Yeah,
and we faced Knebel. We faced Corey Knebel, who's the closer for the Brewers. And the entire bottom section was sold out. It was as big as a crowd for a second round matchup in the state championship.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And we didn't blink. It was just another, another playoff series.
Think about it, because we played, bringing up Majestic Homers, the foul ball I hit in that game at Klein Collins. Still remember it to this freaking day. But yeah, and we lost that first game, right? We lost that first game, and then we won both those games, did doubleheader at Del Diamond. Who was it? Black Pissed, and who else was it?
Corbin would have had game two.
Corbin Pitts, yeah. That's right.
Because Geisler had game one. And it's funny, obviously, I'm wearing my Astros hat and sign stealing and all that. But hey, Corey, if you're listening, Georgetown, if you're listening, we had your signs. We had your signs. There's a reason why we had seven doubles and, your cutter wasn't working that day, because we had your signs. So Georgetown, may want to work on that.
We did sign stealing before it was cool.
Yeah, we did it before it was cool. We just didn't have a trash can to bang on. We just yelled last names and numbers.
So here you go, Dieter. Here comes Dieter ball.
Bam, oh, there's dude. A shot in the gap. It's
yesterday, bro.
Yeah, but it's crazy. Just to look back at all the talent, and obviously, like, when I have conversations with like my dad and some of the other guys, there's people that I was like, they're gonna be in the big leagues. They're just hands down better. Your name was always in the conversation. Tyler Naquin, who's with the Indians. J-Mo obviously was going to be, the next biggest thing. Mitchell Taylor at Spring. Just guys that ooze talent. My buddy Jose Trevino, who's with the Rangers, and Anthony Bonda, who's with the Rays. You just saw them and just knew that they had the capabilities. And then you had, CJ, you had Geisler, you had all these guys on our team that were like just as good or better in their primes. And it was just, it's crazy to see the talent pool that was in Houston during the time. And like, it's always fun to look back, but I'm glad that our friendship is still so great that we can talk, especially now. So thank you for, during your quarantine hours to make some time for us. But when, in your downtime, obviously you got into Twitch over the quarantine break. And that's always fun. You want to tell the people how great you are at this Fortnite game that kids are playing these days?
I mean, I wouldn't call myself great. I'd tell myself I'm competitive. But when it comes to the heat of the moment in Fortnite, I will choke, because those 12 girls are way better than I am. Oh, man. I got to thank you for really getting me on it, because whenever we did the 24-hour stream, I loved that we were just sitting there playing, just kind of shooting the shit. And I was watching on my phone the entire time, just hearing the feedback from everybody. I was like, God, this is super cool. And then, I thought about it, and then I really kind of, took the leap of faith and actually got into it, got everything I needed. You helped me out for pretty much the entire time, any questions, everything. So, yeah, man, I really enjoy it. I think it just gives us a little bit different side, just to show us, who we are, as baseball players.
Yeah, 100%.
The baseball field. So, like, I see Bryce Harper's twitching every single day, and I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done this, years ago. Like, I'm a video game addict, man. Like, if I'm not doing baseball, I'm either playing video games, or being with my wife and my dog. Like, it's just a continuous circle, just doing stuff, man. But I actually played somebody the other day, and it'll be the show, and I actually got my 99 card, which is nasty. And
you have to stream that. We have to see the debut of it.
I haven't streamed since I've been in St. Louis. Just a lot of things have happened, just kind of getting the setup. But I'm probably gonna start back up and get going. If I don't do it this during the season, off season will be a freaking grind, dude. But so I play it. So every time I play with my card, and on my little thing, I have my Twitch handle. Everybody, they stop, they pause the game, they look me up, And after the game, if I win, you know, some guys will message me, say good game, blah, blah, blah. This guy.
And if you don't know everyone listening, if you're a professional ball player, you can reach out to SDS, San Diego Studios on MLB The Show, and they will create a 99 level overall card for said player. So Austin got his 99 level card, which is
took about
the attributes are sick. And he's the only one able to play with it. It's only for the players only.
Yeah. I actually saw like a list that came out, and there's a lot of guys. My former teammate Pablo Lopez reached out to me because he saw I got mine. He goes, "Hey man, like I did mine too. Like where is it?" I was like, "Oh, you gotta check your roster. Like mine's probably been in there for 2 weeks and I didn't even know."
Yeah.
Anyway, so I played this guy, and I ended up beating him. It was, like, a pretty close game. Struck him out a lot. Like, I think it was one hit, and it was only a homer. He messaged me, and he goes, "Shame you're afraid to throw the effing strikes, man. Was a fan of you down here. Oh, looked over your post. Makes sense now. Peace." I'm like, whatever that means, but I guess he's a little upset. But everybody man, that's so cool. Like,
yeah.
Another fellow Twitcher that I played the other day, and he was live, so I, you know, hopped on a stream while playing him, and, you know, he's going freaking crazy that he's playing against me, and I walked him off with my card.
No way.
Walked him off with my card.
That's awesome.
But, I got in his chat and said, good game, and, you know, he was very nice guy. Subbed him 10, free gifted.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
It was cool, man. I think that's just another platform for baseball players, especially in this. Like, you know, when are you going to get the opportunity to ever play a professional baseball player in
100%
of the show? So
yeah, or play with them on Fortnite or
whatever, know,
Call of Duty, whatever it is. I think, and I'm spoiled because I'm fortunate to play with so many people that are way more talented than me that have made the show or in the grind to be, you know, to make the show. So I understand there's a human behind the player, where a lot of fans, I think, just think you guys are, you know, a computer major, you know, just a player on the screen, and they don't realize there's a, you know, you guys are human too. And yeah. I saw it when I visited you in spring training, where people were just, I mean, shove ball. They don't even talk to you, just like shove, you know, ball. And you are the nicest human being on the planet. And All someone has to do is reach out and talk to you, and you know you're gonna sign whatever they have. But these grown men were shoving baseballs in your face, like it was the most crazy. I was like, he's a human being. We're having a conversation here. Like you can wait. Like he'll get to you. But I just couldn't. I couldn't grasp it, man. I couldn't grasp it. And I think now with Twitch, people will be like, hey, they're humans.
You really see the different side of people. So. You know, throughout my baseball career, there have been so many, we call them the card collectors. They have binders and binders and binders of cards, and I don't know what their day job is. This could be it. But they sit there, and they go to every game, and they want you to sign the same damn card, and it's 6 pages of it. And, you know, I sit there, I was like, what do you got to be selling this for, like $5, dude? I was like, and I'm in, like, the minor leagues. I'm on a prospect or anything like that, like, there's no way you're getting this much money for just me signing it. But like, I usually sign all of them just because I don't care. Like I'm nice. And
yeah,
too. Like, you know, they're like, oh, they're making money off of it. Okay, cool. Cool. Good for them, man. But they just want your signature, man. Like yeah. All the kids, like I sit there and I'll have conversations with kids, man, like make their day. Like, cause that's what I wanted when I was a kid. Like I wanted BZO or Bagwell, you know, to sit there and talk to me. So you know, I did it last year, the Marlins in St. Louis, and playing catch with 4 kids in that front row down the
third baseline.
And, you know, the fans in St. Louis, like, absolutely loved that. I'm like, it's like, yeah, just make their day, man. Like, it's like, when are they ever going to have that moment again? You know, they could talk about 100%. That for the rest of their life. It doesn't even matter. It could have been me. It could have been Aaron Judge. It could have been, like, a big-time player. It doesn't matter. But they can say, it's like, oh, yeah, I played catch with a Major League Baseball player.
So that's, yeah, that is awesome. That part's awesome. Cool part. Yeah. And it's interesting to see kind of the dynamic and shift. And I think Major League Baseball can be way better because they kind of blackball content creators and like what we're trying to do. But if the players can have their voice and be able to get on Twitch and get on podcasts, and Trevor Bauer, he has his own podcast and he has his YouTube series. Like, all these players get to bring stuff because they always promote it, right? They always are like, on the field, our voice, whatever, with a commercial they had last year. But I'm just glad Major League Baseball is allowing players to an extent to showcase their voice, because I was worried that they would shut all this down. They'd be like, you guys can't be on Twitch, you guys can't be on YouTube. But in today's age, like, that's, technology's past Major League Baseball, like, let you do what you do, like, let you be on Instagram, let you be on YouTube, let you stream, and let your brand, the Austin Dean brand, continue to grow off the field as well as, on the field.
So I'm saying, like, I don't think they ever realized that until, just kind of the day that we are in, like, just the technology that we have available to us. Like, social media has taken over the world, as much as we like it or not. It's a platform. Yeah. So why not use your platform? Like, I tip my cap to Trevor Bauer. I love the fact that he speaks his mind out, and especially towards Commissioner Manfred. I think it's important because a lot of people don't see, what really goes behind the scenes, what goes on with players, owners, and the commissioner. Yeah. So I applaud him for that.
And I think we saw a little bit of the curtains being pulled back during this whole, are we playing, are we not playing? The owners are putting on the players, and then the players are coming back to the, and we kind of saw it all play out, and how certain sides use the media to pigeonhole other sides. And it was taxing. And I was like, this is everyday life for them. Like, this is, we're seeing it. And that, not only is that stressful for you as a human being, you're trying to make it, and the team's almost like, okay, you're doing it, but service time, we got to send you back down. And to keep you from growing, it's just frustrating to see. And people don't know those stories. People don't understand arbitration. They don't understand the service time rule. They don't get that. They just see, okay, Who's in the lineup today? All right, let's win. Oh, you suck. You struck out. And that's, that's all they want to do. They don't see the stuff behind it. And that's the frustrating thing. And, like, when I started Apollo, I was like, I'm always going to be on the player side, no matter what. Astros could write me the biggest check ever. That's great. Awesome. I'm still on the player side. Like, it's about you guys, because I've seen the stories from you guys, and it's just – it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
I mean, you talk to a normal person outside of, whatever, they see Major League Baseball player. Oh, he makes millions of dollars. Not all of us do. I mean, very fortunate enough for, the money that we make for being on league minimum. We'll never knock that ever. But, some of us are actually out here, playing to get, to set up our family for the rest of our life. That I love baseball, but I look at this as a job. I'm trying to do this so I can support my family for the rest of my life, So
yeah,
when all this stuff happens, playing the cat and mouse game during the quarantine, it sucks, man. Like, in baseball, you don't have a lot of years left, If you're fortunate enough, like, the Acuñas, the Sotos, the Albies, that they get in at 18, 19, 20 years old, and they go and crush it, and those guys are going to be making millions and millions and millions of dollars. With myself, I got in at 24, which isn't old, but I also lost.
You also got drafted at 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So, at 24, I lose some years of being able to get paid, which kind of sucks. So, I mean, that's something that the PA is going to be doing, hopefully next CBA, is just finding out a way just to be able to get guys, paid at that young, early stage. They don't have to wait 6 years at free agency, It's one of those things. But, yeah, man, just the whole thing, like, you got to look at it as a businessman. And I understood it, you know, going through the whole quarantine, you know, why we were holding out. Like, really, it wasn't us holding out, but we wanted to get paid for the days that we played. We didn't want anything less than prorated. And I got that. And I understood why the owners did what they did. It's a business. I get it. Like, if you were in their shoes, you would do the same thing. You'd try to save as much money as you possibly can. I get it.
So. Yeah. It's and I think the common fan hopefully started to see all that play out. And I obviously, it's great for Polymedia if baseball's on the screen. And I just don't, it was almost like you're sacrificing, you're trying to force this year, and you're starting to see it play out. You're getting players, injuries are flaring up, arms are flaring up. And at what cost? People are getting sick. For what cost of the future? If you have some pitchers that are missing all of 2021 because they're getting Tommy, and it's because I think it's correlated to the off again, and then the short summer camp and try to speed up arms. It just, the body's not made to do that. When you guys have, you know, 6 weeks of spring training to get you guys ready for the actual season and not 3.5 weeks coming out of summer camp. And so you're going to see long-term effects, I think, with teams because you're losing guys that you're counting on. Obviously injuries flare up, but in this, you're seeing it happen so much where you're sacrificing the future for a season that may not even happen, may not even finish because of what's going on with, you know, with COVID striking. It looks like it's striking the NL East just because it hates the NL East right now. But it's mind-boggling that you would think that you're going to sacrifice all those future years for something that may not finish today.
Exactly. Man, I could have told you that something was going to happen as soon as we started up with guys getting hurt, man. Like, that's a hard thing to do, especially, you know, with not a lot of information that we were given. You know, we had, it was, hey, you know, we're going to be out 2 weeks. All right. You know, our initial plan was to stay on the spring training campsite. And then we go in the next day. Hey, they're closing down the spring training camp. I was like, why? It's like, well, we can't have anybody with all this COVID outbreak. So, you know, I was forced to pack up all my stuff and do the 18-hour drive home, you know. And then while I was home, coming back to Texas, we were under strict quarantine. Like, it was crazy. We couldn't go out to restaurants. We couldn't go to gyms. Like, okay, so if we can't go to gyms, then how are we supposed to keep our bodies ready, you know? It's like, oh, you can do it in-home workouts. Yeah, you can only do so much that's going to benefit you. You know what I'm saying? So I was fortunate enough that my trainer lives right next to where I work out. And he set up in his garage for us to be able to lift and be able to get a good lift in. And so I did that every single day until we were able to go back into the gym where we work out at. So, and I know for a fact, not a lot of guys have that available to them, you know? Yeah. So I think this whole year is just, it's not a setup for failure, but it's kind of like, well, you know, worked with what you got right now. So I could say that for the most part for my teammates is that they prepared themselves pretty well and they did what they needed to do. I guess some guys came to St. Louis and were able to be able to work out and be able to get live. You know, not a lot of guys got to see live pitching during the quarantine.
How was that? So how was your first at bat? Like, was it like 1,000 miles an hour? Okay.
No, it was fine because I was able to get pitching every week. Because where I work out, there
you just have. You could plug them. You could plug them. You could plug the DST boys.
Yeah. So all the guys that work out at DST. So, you know, we had Robert Duggar that goes there. You know, I faced him quite a bit. Scott Kazmir, I faced him numerous times. If you guys don't know Scott Kazmir, you need to go to a history book. You know, we got some other like prospects out there. And so we had what we needed. And, you know, for me, because I didn't know what our ETA was going to be, I was up there. I wasn't swinging. I was sitting there tracking, you know. I said there was no point for me to be like gung-ho ready. Let's go when we're 2 months out. So, you know, I felt like I did a good job with kind of separating it out to when I needed to get like 100% let's ready and go. And I think that helped because that was my first day, like day one when we got to summer camp. Hey, we're going to be seeing live pitching. Got it. And it was cake, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And especially for a guy that's on the fringe of making a team or not, you had to come in 100% ready. And I think I saw it from my 10,000 foot view a couple of years ago when you first, you changed your body. You had a whole body transformation in the offseason where you just looked, obviously you're a major league athlete, but you went from a major league baseball player to a major league athlete. Like you worked, I mean, you can go into it just from my 10,000 foot view. You bust your ass to reshape your body to be prepared for the major league baseball season. And one, that's one of the most impressive things. And two, I think that's when I was like, okay, Austin Dean is that light is, you know, turned on for him, but he's going from, you know, a major league baseball player to a major league athlete. And that, I think that's when that shift from, you know, you could speak on it, but this is a business and I'm going to treat it 100% like a business because this is my future. Like you said,
it was a lot of it was a part of growing up, I think. So when I was in Double A in 2016, our vice president of player operations, who pretty much oversees and he makes the moves, whether you go up or down, he had told me that, you know, I need to lose weight. He's like, you need to lose weight, a lot of weight, and I want you to go play summer ball. I was like,
and at this time, you're one of the top
winter ball.
You're one of the top batters in all of Double A.
Yeah, at the time, I was doing I was hitting 270. Listen, so I was hitting 278 with 9 pumps and probably 30 to 40 RBIs, which is pretty stupid at like right at the brink of All-Star break. And so he tells me that, he goes, hey man, you're going to be going to AAA here probably next week. I'm like, let's freaking go. Never happened. And I started panicking and then I started to not do so good. So my 278 goes down to 212 and I had a terrible month of July and I picked it back up in August and I finished off with not a good year in my standard, 238 with 12, I think 60 RBIs, something, I don't know. So, you know, I go from being a top prospect to a suspect real quick. And so that off season, I'd weighed 225 pounds. I dropped 25 pounds that off season, came in the best shape of my life in that 2017 season. So from then on out, dude, I realized that, you know, that this actually matters, like taking care of your body, what you put in your mouth, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So it's one of those things, man, like, a lot of it was having to grow up and realize that this is what they want, you know? And Yachty put it, in summer camp, Yachty put it in a good perspective too. Here he goes, it doesn't matter who you are on this team. Everybody here might get an opportunity to help us win a game. And, you know, I'm going to trust you forever, you know, when you get that opportunity. But what I'm not going to sit around and back you up is if you're not taking care of yourself. And Tandre, if you're not prepared, if you're not lifting, you know, and that was during summer camp. I was like, damn, dude, like, you know, so even like during summer camp, like I try to do as much as I can in the weight room. Even now, like right now, I can't really do much.
Yeah.
I just been stretching every single day, just trying to stay limber. But, you know, you'd be surprised like what a lot of these guys do in the weight room, man. It's incredible.
I guess, and I we've talked about it before, you're with the Marlins during one of the most talented teams on paper that I guess really never won. I mean, you had Jose, you had Stanton, you had Yelly, Rillamuto, D. Gordon. You had all these guys. You had all these guys. So it's almost a two-part question because we've talked about it before, but all the new listeners probably haven't. What was it like playing with those guys? That's question one. And then question two, you're now with the Cardinals and you're with Hall of Famers. You're with veterans in the game. You know, the Yachtys, the Wainwrights, the Carpenters, the Goldschmidts. You have these guys. So what's it like now with them as, you know, these Hall of Famers, but back then as well with all that talent you guys had in Miami?
This is not a knock on Miami or anything like that, but nobody wanted to be there. And it was very apparent, and that's why they all got traded. So I think once, like, when Jose passed away, it was very clear. You know, you're trying to change something up. I don't know what it was, you know, but being around those guys, like, Yelich was an incredible dude. Jose was even better, like, to this day, man, hands down, the greatest human being on earth. Like, just awesome, man. I just remember, you know, when that happened, you know, I got a text from my agent, and I thought he was joking. I turned on the news, and I'm sitting there, and it's just like Kobe dying, dude. I sat there from the time I woke up till the end of the day, just watching, just not, like, just, yeah, didn't think it was reality. It was sad, man. But with those guys, it was just, it was good to watch them and to be around them, but they didn't want to be there. They just cared about, you know, themselves and getting out of there, which, okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
I could say after the time when Jose died, but, you know, what separates those guys from here, the Cardinals, is that these guys like Yachty and Wainwright and all these guys that we list off, like, they care about you. They want you to get better because they understand that if everybody, you know, if we're like this, that's what's going to help us succeed and, you know, go to the playoffs and go to the World Series.
Yeah.
And so they actually are trying to get you to, like, get better. You know, I talk to Yachty and Goldie all the time about, you know, just certain things that go on during the game, you know. So just to kind of get their baseball knowledge and, you know, at least I can try to, like, you know, retain it and trying to, like, just put it into play or something like that. So I think that's what separates is that, you know, you got the older guys that care, that genuinely care, and they want you to get better.
Yeah. I think when you say baseball knowledge, I was on a flight from Houston to Jupiter. I told you this. And I'm sitting first class, and the guy comes, sits next to me, and I'm like, that's Paul Goldschmidt. I know that's Paul Goldschmidt. And so we take it off, and we're in the air, and I'm just like, hey, Paul, you know, he probably gets as much. I was like, hey, I've been a huge fan since your days at Texas State and the Woodlands. And he kind of looks at me. You know, he probably hears I'm a biggest fan of, you know, I enjoy, you know, from Arizona. But he's like, how do you – I was like, I grew up in Spring, you know, right off 2920. I went to Klein Collins. So I, you know, obviously know about you and how prestigious those Woodlands, you know, state title runs were for you guys. And he was like, oh, shit. And we just started talking, and we just started talking baseball. And he had this pamphlet book, leather-bound book. But it wasn't a book. It was notes. And I thought it was like an author, like he's reading a book, whatever. No, it was a book with every single, almost seems like every single at bat he's ever had in the history of his playing career. And he has sequences, he has stuff like, okay, I did this. I didn't, we talked for a little bit. I just let him be because he was taking notes and doing all this stuff. And I was like, holy shit, he's going back through like this computer database to figure out what he did right or what he did wrong. And it was just really cool to see him the entire flight. He, but you know, the light was on, it was, you know, 11 PM. He's just working. And so we land and we're talking, we walk and we're both waiting for our cars to be pulled around. And he was just like, I was like, hey, are you excited? Like, this is your first spring training outside of Arizona. Cause he just, you know, went over to the Cardinals. And he goes, I've never been more excited since maybe the first time I remember Santa Claus bringing gifts. And I was just like, you could see it in him, like how it was like a breath of fresh air and just how excited he was to be at a new place with a new team. And I was like, that's why he's a perennial all-star. Like people just think he rolls up and he probably can roll up and hit a ball, you know, 500 feet, but it's the grind of it all where he can just, he's a consummate pro. And it was really cool to just for that short moment to see him work. And see that baseball mind work.
Bro, he's the definition of the most prepared person in baseball. You know what I mean? He does his homework day in and day out. And, you know, I applaud him for that because that's a hard thing to do, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to not do that at all. Like, I didn't know, like, I needed to do that. I used to just, same thing. Who we facing? All right, they don't stand a chance. can't do that in the big leagues, man, because everybody's freaking good, man. So, like, you know, we have everything sent to us on our iPad of, you know, who we're going to be facing, you know, the next day, who's in their bullpen. So, you know, I'll stay up at night, you know, if we go to a new series or whatever, you know, I see who we're facing the next day, and I'm watching. I'm watching all of his stuff. I get his chart. I see, you know, kind of his bat chart, like, you know, where he likes to throw it, like what he throws in certain counts. You know, we have all this information that's given to us as players. And, you know, and a lot of guys, I feel like, take that for granted. You know, they don't use it to, you know, what it's used for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
and I never got to do that. I wish I'd have done that a little bit earlier when I got to the big leagues, because I see how important it is now. Because, you know, we go over everything every single day. We always have a hitters meeting. Hey, facing Yu Darvish today. What you guys got on Yu Darvish? Well, he throws a frisbee slider that he likes to throw a lot. He throws about 7 different pitches, you know. Throws 100 whenever he wants sometimes. I'm saying, like, these things, these conversations that we have. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of stuff that goes into baseball that people don't really get. Like, oh, you guys just go and play. More stuff to it. But, yeah, Paul is – just talking to him about certain things is mind-blowing. You know, his concept, his philosophy, and all that stuff.
When is too much information or data too much for you as an individual where you don't want to drown in the numbers? Obviously, all that is useful to know. You know, he throws this ball, you know, it throws a two-seam fastball on a 2-1 count 75% of the time. But has there been times where you just were like, hey, the data isn't, like, too much data is in my head. I'm going to be a ball player and play. And the other times it's like, when's that line, you know, blurred, what you cross it or not, where it's too much data.
So, in that 2016 year, that's the year I really took it in that what was given to me was too much. Because I looked into it way too much more than I really needed to. And I think that was a part of the reason why I fell off a lot. And that next year I went to, all right, I want to know what he throws, how hard he throws it, and that's it. Because the percentages that you're given are his overall percentages. So now that percentage is going to be different when I come to the plate as a 3-4
hitter. Right. It's over time.
You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to take the information that you're given and kind of take it with a grain of salt, you know, use it what you want with it. So, like, for me, again, I like to know all the pitches he throws, like, know how hard he throws it. And there are certain breaking balls that I want to know that he throws more. So with Darvish, he throws a lot of sliders, right?
Just on the track, yeah.
Darvish. A lot of sliders, a lot of cutters, you know? And so when I'm hitting, you know, I kind of put that in my mind a little bit on certain counts. You know, I'll sit. All right, he's going to throw a slider here. He's going to throw a slider here. Oh, no, just a cutter. You know, your mind's got to be able to adjust on the fly. I don't do it a lot, but I do have a plan when I go up and hit, and I'm looking for certain things. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. What is being in the NL East? You're up. Obviously, we know the Mad Max, the DeGroms, but who's a guy that had filthy stuff that you didn't expect, or you finally faced and was like, yeah, that's absolutely filthy, that you, like, the common fan wouldn't know?
Dude, all of them, man. That entire division. Dude, every single guy in that division is just unbelievable. You know what I mean? You can expect Scherzer is incredible. Strasburg, so when I faced Strasburg the first time in 2018, I think this wasn't his good year. And I didn't think he was very good. In my mind, I'm sitting here, I'm like, it's Steven freaking Strasburg. Guy throws 100. You know, it wasn't the same guy. It was kind of a mental midget year that year. But that next year I faced him in 2019, I stood no chance. And he knew that. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was that guy last year. I stood no chance.
He's a horse. Said, man,
that entire division is, that's a tough hitting league. You know what I mean? I promise, guys, I'd do well on that.
That's, I mean, that's what you expect when you're in the bigs, someone always having filthy stuff. We'll go into the last segment here, and we're almost at the hour mark. But before we do that, you got one of your first big sponsorships I am second. Do you want to touch on that and that message and your relationship with them?
That was cool, man. They reached out to me on Instagram, and you know, this has been a company that I've followed for years, like in high school, man. Like, my mom got me into it, and you know, I've always liked the message that it sent. You know, I'm second. You put God before yourself. And you know, I've always, you know, worn that wristband right here, if I can get it out. Worn that wristband for almost 10 years now, and credit, this is not a 10-year-old one because I break them like at least once a year, so I have just a stockpile of those things. But yeah, no, they reached out to me and they asked me if I wanted to, you know, be a part of you know, their company. I was like, yes, 100%. And it was a, you know, nonprofit thing, and I was like, I don't want to get paid for this. Like, this is just something that I really want to do and be a part of with you guys. So, you know, I called, like, I was so excited. I called my parents, I called, you know, my wife, and you know, that was just, it was super cool just to be a part of that group. And you know, because with my relationship with God, like, it's been a very up and down roller coaster throughout my baseball career, where there have been times where I've, you know, thought about quitting, never thinking I'm good enough. I always deal with the anxiety portion that I'm never good enough. And, you know, I always have help from, you know, with Sarah and my, you know, with my parents, just, you know, telling me just to trust in God's plan and, you know, just to talk to him and just, you know, just trust what he's doing is, you know, for my good. So, yeah, man, I just, you know, very blessed and very happy and fortunate that they reached out to me.
Yeah, it's, I saw Sarah, your wife, she had posted this, you know, this huge thing on Facebook, and she's always, you know, she's your ride or die. She's always posted Austin Dean stuff.
Oh, she's you know, my your number parents one too. Fan, dude.
But you could see this from her perspective and your parents' perspective, how they were talking through it, and just how excited they were for you and to have that partnership and be that brand ambassador for them. I was so ecstatic for all you guys. And it's a great, we'll plug the links down and in the pod. But this last segment we do all our guests. We always end the pod like this, as Ask Apollo, hashtag Ask Apollo. So we have some questions from people on Twitter. These are actually all very, very baseball-oriented questions. Last one, I had to talk about if I had to jump into if I could jump into a pool and it'd be filled with any food, what would it be, and why spaghetti. Would it be pudding? You said spaghetti. Okay, I said M&Ms, but then I was like, well, the M&Ms are gonna melt.
That'd be too
and then
hard.
It's just like chocolate lava.
You dive head first in that. You would break your skull.
You're growing a pool full of spaghetti?
Yeah, I don't like spaghetti, but I just feel like that'd be kind of like one of those things you'd want to experience.
I felt more like using it as a thing, like unlimited supply of food, like Willy Wonka. Like, I just have a pool full of M&Ms. That's how I thought through it. Not so much like the comfort of spaghetti, but all these questions are more baseball based. The first one is from at Copier Colin. He's one of our chief content officers, the chief content officer at Apollo. Mm-hmm. He goes, I would like Austin to give his honest opinion based on his perspective, if he thinks the season will finish and whether or not it was worth it in the first place, considering all the injuries from lack of prep time. Now, Austin, me as your good friend, do not say anything that is going to get you in trouble. You can always say the next question.
No, I'll answer it. Do I think it's worth it? Yes. Do I think baseball will get shut down if we have another outbreak? Yes, I think we'll get shut down. I think as far as everybody, you know, doing their part and following protocol and, you know, just not being stupid with this, you know, I think we're going to be fine. So, you know, yes, I think it's worth it because I think we were at a point in time where we needed something to look forward to. You know, there was no basketball, there was no hockey, you know, no baseball. You know, we were at a really pivotal point in, you know, with just today in history, where we needed something to get our mind, just get our minds off of COVID and, you know, all the stuff that's been going on and the riots and everything like that, man, which is terrible to say. And, you know, I don't mean it the way it comes out. but we needed something to kind of go from being separated to, you know,
up the morale. Yeah.
Up the morale, which, you know, baseball could, may not, who knows, but.
The next question is from at Correa Veneers. He asks, how do the restrictions interfere with preparation? Can you still just go take some hacks in a cage anytime you feel you need to, or is everything more organized?
A little bit of both. Everything's a little bit more organized. So me, I'm not a regular starter. I'm a bench player. So I'm one of those guys that will possibly come in later in the game. So for me, like, we can't be in the dugout with the starters at all. So we're in the stands watching, which is very different because I've never watched a baseball game.
A major league, yeah.
In probably 10 years. So it's weird to do that. So, you know, about the fifth inning, we go down to the tunnel where our cage is, and, you know, all the guys that aren't starting. We go down there, we stretch, and we have an idea who may be coming in later in the game. So we prep in the cage. You know, we have a machine that we can calculate on. So we had Kyle Crick, or Kyle Crick, guy for the Pittsburgh. We had it set up for his slider in there, the machine. So it has his arm angle. It has, you know, how the ball's going to come out. So we prep for that for the game. You know, so we're down there from the fifth inning till on. So, yeah.
The next question is from me because I didn't touch on the podcast. What is it like playing in an empty stadium?
I'm used to it. That's not a knock to the Marlins. I did it all last year when I was in AAA New Orleans. We had about maybe seven people that came to the games every day. So, and then, you know, at the games at the Marlins Park, it wasn't the most packed games ever. There's probably a few thousand scattered. So, I mean, it's weird to not hear the crowd enjoyment and the reaction. The fake crowd, I'm not in on that right now. It's a little too much. So,
been on that on the internet connection, but the next question is from at 44 tipping. A player's taken all the injuries league wide would be interesting. Is this, do you think it's normal, or do we not notice it as much in a 162 game season?
It's a little bit of both. You know, you don't really notice that much, but again, we talked about how, you know, there might be some guys that, you know, might be getting hurt just because of the time off that we had and not being that normal routine of playing 162 games. So, I mean, don't be surprised if some guys do get hurt, but, you know, I think in the long run that they're going to be fine unless, you know, it's just one of those things.
At Logmeyer asks Apollo, what's the procedures like in place for you guys currently? I guess not obviously in quarantine right now, but tomorrow when you go to the stadium, when you wake up in the hotel, what's that day before first pitch? What does that look like with the new procedures?
So it just depends on the days if we're testing. So we do test every other day. So for me, I like getting to the ballpark as early as I can, but everything's all set scheduled times now. So you can't be at the ballpark, I think, 5 hours earlier than the game. So, you know, we get there, get on the bus at 2, get to the stadium, and you go and do your testing. So once you're done with your testing, then you do what you got to do to get yourself prepared for that day, you know? So they did mandate that we need to wear masks in the locker room now on if we're not doing anything. Same within the stands. So, you know, they're doing their part. They're doing what they need to do and just kind of up the kind of the safety protocols on that. So, and again, it's our job as players to follow that to prevent things like this that is going on right now.
Yeah. The last question is from at M. She does it. She goes, what are the biggest differences he's noticed between the Marlins organization to the Cardinals organization as far as day-to-day operations and culture are concerned?
I think both sides has its perks. The one thing I noticed with the Cardinals is how just how you are treated. You get treated as a big leaguer, you know. And for me, I don't take advantage of that because I to me, I haven't proven anything. I haven't proven, you know, who I am. So, you know, I'm a very easy person. I don't ask for a lot of things, like, at all. You know, you could imagine there's guys that, you know, they need whatever they need, they will go and get it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm one of those guys. I'll ride out like one pair of cleats for the entire year. You know,
yeah.
And my agent has to harp on me, get new cleats. I'm like, nah, dude, I'm good. Now, but with the Cardinals, man, it's just, I just noticed the, you know, how they treat their players and kind of the accommodations with all of it too. But, like, just the guys that they have in the organization, how they're really good, genuine dudes. And, you know, they have all these really good relationships with everybody. You know what I mean? You know, with the Marlins, it was just, sometimes it was just hard to understand what was going on and kind of get a straight answer sometimes. You know, I'm not going to knock them for anything because, you know, I enjoyed being over there. But, you know, sometimes the lack of communication, I felt really hurt in the sense of just not knowing, you know, the role that I was going to be in or just know what was going on. So, and it was tough. It was tough. But, yeah, like, I enjoyed my years there. I always thank them for, you know, giving me the opportunity that they did. But.
And the final question will just be the number change. The number change. Finally, I'm gonna get an Austin Dean jersey where it's not a linebacker's number or a, you know, a tight end. Oh, number, man. Zero.
It took some time to get that one, man. I got some backlash for that one too.
Did they? So, they're busting your chops?
Well, it wasn't about the number. It was about how I told the story, how I wanted the number. So, you know, I talked to our equipment guy, Mark Walsh, about, you know, possibly changing my number. And I asked him, I was like, what numbers have we got available? You know, single digit. And he goes, not a lot. I was like, I figured. And he goes, what are you looking for? I was like, three. And he goes, can't give you three. I said, five. And before I even finished, you know, I said, five. I immediately, like, okay, don't listen to that one. I totally forgot. And he goes, no big deal. It's like, he goes, I get it. So I tell that story to the media, and all these people on social media are talking shit about me. How dare you think you could take number five or even think about asking? I'm like, yo,
did they really?
Yeah, I was like, dude, chill. Like, out of respect for him, 100%, I would never do that. But it's hard to sit there and go and think about it because he's still an active player. You know, he's in LA. So, like, my bad for not considering that. You know what I mean? So, like I said, it's like some people are giving me some shit about it, and I don't really care. No, I guess it's just a number, but, you know, I took my shot at the dark, and I was like, you know, hey, what about number zero? He goes, really? Why zero? I was like, bro, I just want a single digit. And I said, the only reason I want a single digit is because I got four letters in my last name, and a freaking wide receiver number does not look good with that. So, and so when I get to summer camp, you know, I saw my 38 jersey. I'm like, damn it, dude. I didn't change it. And then I look at all my stuff. So, like, what they do with all your like shirts and short sliders, shoes, everything, they tag it. So they go in and they, like, press it down with your number on it. So I go and look. They all have number zero on it. I'm like, oh, no freaking way. They really did it. And I saw him come in the locker room. I was like, bro, you did it? He goes, yeah, I got you, dog. And I was so hyped, dude. And then we had our first, like, summer camp inter squad, and I debuted the number zero. And, you know, some guys like, dude, they gave you a number zero. I was like, I asked for it. And they're like, why? I just wanted a single digit, dude. That's single all digit. I wanted. Man. But, dude, I love it. I ride or die with zero right now. And then, you know, people came to the conclusions like, so did you change it because it's Dean O? I was like, I mean, yeah, I've been called that my entire life. But sure, let's ride with it. I don't care.
Yeah, we'll ride with it.
I absolutely love it.
I love it just because it's more aesthetically pleasing, like you said, but it's going to pain me to order that off Major League Baseball, but I'm going to support you as an Astro fan. It's going to pain me to rock a Cardinals red, but I'll only do it when they pencil you in. So Austin Dean, thank you for tuning in, coming in on this podcast, brother. So proud of you and so thankful for your friendship, and can't thank you enough, bro.
Always, man. I love doing stuff like this. You know, it's a pleasure to be on here with you, and I love what you're doing with Apollo Media, man. I love seeing it grow. I always check, you know, the Twitch and how many guys you got following now. I love it from the start where you first really started to where you're at now. Like, you know, this is something that I can see growing, and I love the fact that, you know, you got McCullers to get some of y'all's apparel. Like, I thought that was super cool, man. So
yeah.
Like I said, I love what you guys are doing, and you know, I will support you because you are my friend. You know, I won't support the Astros by any means, but yeah. Again, I'm boys with Bregman, and you know, I wish them the best of luck. So, yeah, man, this is super cool what you guys are doing.
Thank you, bro. It means a lot. It means a lot. I'll let you get let you go back to your quarantine life. But everyone, if you haven't, you want to plug in. You have your IG. You want to plug that? What, you want to plug anything else?
Yeah, man, if you guys want to give me a follow, it is AustinDean_3, even though I should probably change that. You go follow me on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/TheDeanBag3. Guys, just give me a follow on that. You don't have to sub anytime soon because I'm not going to be playing that much. Anyways, partially streaming. But yeah, man.
Yeah. Perfect. Y'all go follow. Thank you, Deaner.